This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
The very darkest of predictions made by all of you in the first hour of the program tonight. Now we'll see what somebody who makes his living making predictions has to say. Sean David Morton's coming right up. He's really something. Lots and lots of hits, has made all kinds of successful predictions. And I guess that's what separates the amateur from the pro. Since studying at the British International School in Cairo, Egypt, then at Stanford, graduating with from USC with majors in political science and fine arts, Sean David Morton has been an investigative journalist and writer, director, producer for TV and films. Is renowned futurist, intuitive, and earth-sensitive, with many of his stunning and startling predictions made right here on this program since he first appeared with me 10 years ago in 1991. That is a long time ago. Sean was instrumental in bringing Area 51 to your attention out there. Did work for Strange Universe, did the first stories on the Chupacabra and UFO contactee Adrian. I remember that. Has written, produced, and consulted for Sightings, Now It Can Be Told, Hard Copy, Unsolved Mysteries, and it just goes on and on. I'm sure you've heard the resume before. Studied with the Dalai Lama in India. He's got a very, very interesting background and is involved very much now in remote viewing, and actually at the moment is over the hill from me, just over the hill from me, over the hump in Pahrump, as they say. He's over the hump in Las Vegas at a hotel, but prepared to make predictions for you. Discuss his hits, his misses, and his predictions for the coming year. And no matter who you are, you really do have to admit, with all that's going on right now, latest rumblings between India and Pakistan, really awful, awful. Two nuclear powers fully prepared to use what they have. And the 9/11 war, I'm going to call it. And the threat to America, you know, that's attendant with it. And, by the way, they extended the threat to Americans through, what, January 2nd or something. Obviously worried about the new year. So anyway, coming up in a moment is Sean David Morton. And now, over the hump from Pahrump in Las Vegas is Sean David Morton. Hi, Sean.
Hi. Live from Caesar's Palace, Nevada.
Is that where you are, Caesar's?
Yes, Caesar's Palace here.
Real style.
It's very, very nice. We came out here actually because USC and the University of Utah were actually playing in the what became the Las Vegas Bozo Bowl out here.
I see.
My fiance Melissa actually went to the University of Utah. And, of course, I went to USC, so we came out here to see this this horrible football game.
So you're going to get married, huh?
Yeah, it looks that way. And actually, we actually met through your show, strangely enough. So it's
you met through my program?
Absolutely. So I have that to thank you for as well. She was a listener on the show, and she contacted a friend of mine who was an astrologer that I'd recommended, and The astrologer friend of mine, Stacy Dean, said, "Well, your charts are fairly compatible." And then we actually met at a conference. I think it was December of '98, which was actually here at Caesar's Palace.
Boy, you're going to owe me big for this.
I owe you big, Art. I'm telling you, I owe you big. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know.
She gets the ring on her finger, and I get one in my nose.
We'll think of something later. I'm sure we'll think of something.
But you do have some. I actually shipped them up to a premiere up in Oregon. I have some movies for you. I'm on the award nominating committee for the Academy for the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild. So you've got a whole bunch of first run videos on their way to you.
Wow!
Because they're shipping me all these movies. I mean, I got a stack of about 20 movies that I'm supposed to watch and then vote on. and what the heck?
That's a big honor.
I slipped in a Britney Spears DVD for you too. So, so that's all in the package.
We'll see if it ever makes it past Oregon.
Yeah, she's got it up at premiere, and I got a couple of other movies too. I've got the Royal Tenenbaums and Evolution, and I'm not sure if you've seen any of them, but
no.
They're on their way to you.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. All right. So you advertise tomorrow's headlines today.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. How does one discern tomorrow's headlines?
Well, the biggest thing about what I've been doing since 1993, and actually when I originally came on your show about 10 years ago, it was mostly when we were right at the cutting edge of Area 51, and this was about, you know, 2 years before X-Files and sightings, and
before the whole genre.
And your program was so much the spur for so much of an awakening and enlightenment and an opening of consciousness beginning in the 1990s and then going through the whole rest of the decade.
Yeah, it was the anchor for all of that.
And then I guess one of my first major national predictions that I made was the San Francisco earthquake on October 17th of 1989, and I'd actually taken a large group of people up to Mount Shasta to do a series of meditations to see if there was some way that we could avert the quake or literally drill energy into the planet to somehow soften the impact. And this is one of the first things that made national news, because we were in Mount Shasta, and one of the reporters of the San Francisco Chronicle at that time.
Were you drilling?
No. There's a prayer technique that one can use, that you can use a group of people and actually use a meditative technique to, I guess, very much like acupuncture needles in the body. You try to drill, psychically speaking, sort of like golden needles into the planet to try to divert energy. And we've done this, I feel, successfully in a number of times.
But the skeptics out there would say the following. You predict something is going to happen at Shasta, let's say.
Well, it didn't happen.
And then you go and you prevent that from occurring.
Well, what happened was that in order to work the energy of Northern California, you go to Mount Shasta. There's an energy vortex in Shasta.
Operates
the vortex. But my prediction was that there would be a massive earthquake in the 7.0 range within a 60-mile radius of San Francisco the last 2 weeks of October of 1989. And that was one of my first major hits. And since then, writing a manuscript for a conference back in 1992, September 17th, called The Millennium Factor, and it was actually in that manuscript I did everything from predict not only Clinton's election, but Ross Perot reentering the presidential race, the exact percentage that Ross Perot would get.
Oh, I know. You did. You hit all that on the nose.
And the percentage that Clinton would win by. And also, interestingly enough, and this was something that was just that I really just freaked out about just in the last week and a half or so, was that one of the things that I kept seeing, and this had directly to do with Osama bin Laden as being what I call one of the I guess you could call antichrist figures that were coming up in the future, and this face that I kept seeing around the turn of the century that was responsible for all this terror in the United States and was the leader of a terrorist network all around the world. And this face was so clear to me that I worked with a friend of mine, Steve Hills, who lived up the street from me in Hermosa Beach, who actually worked as a police artist, and we actually came up with a sketch of this face, the large eyes, the sort of large lips, what looked like an indentation on the side of the face.
Right.
And then in 1997, when I finally saw him on the TV, it was 97 or 98, I think it was 98, I think, when I saw him on the TV. And then I started writing my newsletter. Look, this man, this Osama bin Laden character, this is going to be the guy that's responsible for terrorist attacks against the United States, which would close down the aeronautic infrastructure of the U.S., specifically aeronautical attacks, blowing up buildings, blowing up aircraft. And the one feature that I'd seen was this, I kept seeing him like shaking his fist at the West, and I kept seeing a gold ring with a red stone in the ring itself. And this is one of the things that I put in my 92 manuscript, which was this face with a thing that said wanted, dead or alive, the Antichrist. And then it had him holding up this gold ring with the red stone.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And I literally, about a week and a half ago, when they finally showed that videotape of the interview, I'd only seen him holding up his right hand with a microphone in his hand or in combat fatigues or whatever. But there was a series in the videotape where he suddenly then held up his left hand, and you clear as day see this gold ring with this red stone in it. And I remember jumping out of my chair and, you know, pointing at the TV and jumping up and down, and I had some friends over saying, "This is it. That's the ring that I saw." So it was just another confirmation of my drawing of this red ring. And a lot of people who've watched the videotape recently have actually called me and commented and said, there was the red ring that you saw on his hand, and we saw it on the videotape. So in the process of this, of my writing this down in 1993, there were so many, when I started the Prophecy Research Institute and started publishing the Delphi Associates newsletter, there were just so many people that were at that time, if you remember, predicting that California was going to fall into the ocean and that, you know, that there were, you know, a whole series of kind of massive megaquakes that were going to fracture America.
No, absolutely.
And I didn't see it. I mean, it was the one
thing.
I recall. And, you know, I said, well, here's what's going to happen. You're going to see earthquakes in Flagstaff in Arizona, which happened, and then you're going to see quakes in Southern California in the Palmdale Northridge area. And then, you know, that was another one that, that garnered a lot of national attention because I predicted the Northridge quake. I actually missed the date of the quake by, I think, 10 days, and I had people calling, threatening to kill me, and they knew where I lived, and they were going to blow my head off and all this stuff, and then the quake happened like 10 days later, and so it was one of those scenarios where, you know, it's horrible, and you're like, oh, no, and at the same time, you're like,
What is it, Sean, that these people, I mean, what are they suggesting they would blow your head off for? Are they suggesting that you caused it?
No, because I was wrong about predicting it, they thought, because the quake was 10 days later than I thought, because I said the quake was going to happen between December 25th and January 7th.
Yeah, but within 10 days is a... I mean, I can't imagine them getting that angry over that.
No, I know. You know, it's just there's nutty people out there. But anyway, so the idea was is that to answer your original question about doing this... what I do is I work directly with maps, and I've been on television a number of times with this, where I simply go into a meditative state and I focus on the maps and I run my hands over the maps.
And what is it that you feel with your hands? In other words, when you get to a place where there's going to be a problem, what do you actually can describe to me what you feel?
It's a physical spike of energy. It's a it's literally a disturbance in the force, if you will. Like, it's almost like there's an energy that comes off the map that just comes up and it almost feels like a bite, literally like being stung by something.
And what do you think the source of the energy that's causing you to feel that is?
I'm not sure. I, you know, there's parts of this that I don't even understand myself in regards to, how I do what I do.
I mean, know, but that's gotta be something that you wonder about, Sean. If there's an energy, then the chief question number one is, where is it coming from? What is causing Sean's hand to go, oh my God, look at this?
Well, I tune into the planet itself and I do a lot of daily meditations that are directly connected to the core of the planet as a source of energy and as a source of, I guess you could say, light and heat on a spiritual level. And I guess it's just that sensitivity to the planet. And then when I run my hands over the maps and then that energy comes up, the way that I've been able to do it is that I try to break it down. It's one of the things that I teach in my classes, that I try to show people that everybody has this ability, and it's just a matter of focusing that ability, sort of putting the blinders on, if you will, and focusing that ability into trying to get specific information. So whenever I feel running my hands over the maps, whenever I feel this, I'll focus on it. And focusing on it sometimes comes in the terms of, let's say, for example, if I feel what feels like earthquake activity, I'll feel a rumbling deep within the earth, and then I'll go maybe December, January, February, March, and then that energy will rise, and there'll be an event window, if you will, literally a plateau, what I call an event horizon, of a period of time. It's usually anywhere between 10 days to 2 weeks or so, where you then have a event horizon for that particular event, and then the energy then slopes down the other side.
Why is there a window? In other words, I know that for psychics, for remote viewers, timelines are the most single difficult thing to nail down exactly. So you come up with a window. How do you do that?
I think it just has something to do with an interaction of consciousness. I think that it's the nature of time as we know it, and the nature of consciousness itself. And I guess because time is an agreed upon reality. I mean, if we both agree that it's you know, approximately 11:25, then it's 11:25. And of course, another time zone it would be different. It's all agreed upon reality. The idea is you've got about 6 billion people on the planet who are all holding hands, walking backwards, literally creating the universe as they get there, which is sort of a quantum physics concept. And I believe that the future as we know it is being directly shaped by the mass consciousness of some 6 billion people on the planet, But with an overmind, if you will, and you can call it, God or the
Creator.
Can I
stop you for a second?
Yes.
If the future of our planet is being determined by those upon it, what they're thinking, the mass consciousness. Now, I grant you that I only began taking predictions from the public an hour before you came on. You didn't happen to hear it, did you?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't get it on the radio here.
Okay, good. Well, that's fine. Well, of course you can get it there. It's 7:20.
I've just got a clock radio, actually, in here that doesn't... This fries on the AM dial. I'm sorry.
Boy, it must be fried. That's 50,000-watt station. All right, anyway, in the predictions that I got to take, 9 of them were dire. Mm-hmm. And I mean... dire, talking about nuclear events, nuclear explosions, Nibiru coming back, or news of it, Wormwood, the poisoning of the world, depression in Europe, depression in the U.S., Bush out of office by mid-year. The majority of them, North Pole civilization found, I mean, pretty dire stuff. Now, I'll grant you the atmosphere right now here in this country is dire, and a lot's happened, and we see a lot directly ahead. But, boy, people are feeling dark.
Well, I guess the good news is it's not going to come down that way. This is the difference between understanding the patterns of the way things work and understanding the unraveling of the nature of time itself, and also having, and I think that you probably know this better than anybody else, that there is a great plan that's actually being put into place. I think a lot of that is actually outlined in ancient monuments, such as the pyramids in Chichen Itza and the Great Pyramid of Giza. And since my studies of the Great Pyramid, since I was very young, and my stepfather took us all to Egypt for about a year or so, and my fascination with the pyramids, it's been the timeline that was actually laid out in the pyramids, I think, gives me an idea of the grand picture. And then it's for me to use my very humble abilities and my connections with spirit to predict what is to come on the quinta level as
okay,
opposed
so
to the quantum
level.
Okay, so
for 2002, you would say the people making these really dire predictions are off base.
Yes, there are. You know, there's individualized dire things that happen. There is, for example, the biggest thing about 2002 is that 2002 is it's a building year. It's a foundation year. I guess numerologically you can say that 2001 was a 3 year, and 3 mystically represents the child. It represents the 1 of the yod of the masculine, the 2 of the passive feminine submissive, and then the 3.
Which means what?
Which is then the combination of the masculine and the feminine, which is then a combination of the 3rd, which is the child force, if you will. And so 2001 was represented by childlike rage, by instability in governments, instability in travel, instability in business.
It lived up to it all.
Corporations making ridiculous decisions, the massive instability that I saw. Now,
all right, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Since you're in Las Vegas, this one's for you, Sean.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire.
By the way,
got a whole lot of money that's ready to
remind me to ask Sean. He said he won thousands of dollars already in town there using his method. We'll ask him about that.
And I am just a devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! How I wish that there were more than the 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, there's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel, a fortune won and lost.
From the archives of Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell describes a rather unfortunate on-air incident.
I've got next to me what's called a cart rack. Part of it came apart during the break. And a bunch of carts fell down. I thought I would fix it. I ran into the other room and got a container of super glue. So I took a pair of scissors right here and I cut the top off the super glue to get it to float. Well, it flowed all right. It flowed all over me. And I think that I've glued my lips together. This is the dumbest thing that I've ever done by a country mile. I've actually glued my lips together. I think I ripped part of my lip off. I did. In my panic, I ripped part of my lip off. Actually, a little piece of my lip in the ashtray here. Well, it sure is what everybody says. Well, if they're so good at what they do, then why don't they go make a bunch of money in Las Vegas? Well, Sean's in Las Vegas. So how you doing?
I'm doing great. We've won $11,000 so far.
Not
so bad.
Are you serious?
Yeah. 11? Yeah, we did, and it's off of...
11 grand? Playing what?
Playing roulette, specifically. What we do
wow.
is that we actually use a... and this is from way back in the... starting back in the 70s and in the 80s, we went up to Reno. When was this? I was actually dating Elizabeth Targ, who was Russell Targ's daughter at the time.
Oh, yes.
And who's now Dr. Elizabeth Targ. And she's
That's right.
A very, very talented psychiatrist who's working on, who's actually putting together statistical data of prayer and how prayer actually has helped in AIDS patients and, you know, various
I'm looking into that really hard right now.
So, and she would be a great person to have on your program because she's a really fabulous girl.
Good idea.
The idea was is that we went up with Dr. James Spottiswood, whose brother is Roger Spottiswood, who directs most of the James Bond movies now. And James was doing a thesis on the mathematical probabilities of remote viewing, specifically using remote viewing to predict the outcome of a random number generator, in this case, a roulette wheel.
Uh-huh.
So we had a group of about seven people, and we went up to my folks' condo up in Lake Tahoe. And we did 10 throws on the wheel, and we were actually, of the 10, we had 7 hits, 1 push, and then the 9th and the 10th throws on the wheel were completely whacked out because by that time people had won so much money that...
How much money are you talking about?
At that time, I think it was hard to say because it was a group of people that were actually pooling their money, but, you know, we're looking at probably within the group about a little over $20,000, I guess.
Huh.
And
in Las Vegas, they throw card counters out on their ear. They can tell, apparently, when somebody's counting cards.
Yeah, but there's no way to actually control this because...
No, you can't control a psychic.
It's a whole different thing.
You can't control a remote viewer. In other words, they couldn't look at you and see you in a state of concentration that would give you away.
Well, correct, because you do, actually, all the concentration is actually done up in your room before you actually go down and place your bet. So what we were doing back then James had actually put together a couple of huge file folders of 8x10 photographs of different remote viewing targets, specifically, like, you know, gingerbread houses and, you know, shoes and airplanes and, you know, the Eiffel Tower and various monuments and what have you. And then the way you do it is that you then pick 4 targets, and those 4 targets relate to the 4 possible outcomes of a roulette wheel, which would be the 0, 00, the first third, the second third, and the last third of
right.
the wheel. So you're actually
right.
doing 1 to 12, 13 to 24, and then like 25 to 36, I think it is.
Yeah, I know, but with the timeline being the most difficult thing for remote viewing.
No, here's what you do, is that on your coordinate, and this is what I teach people now, in my spiritual remote viewing classes, we've actually got one coming up in Pasadena on the 19th of January, is that what we do is that we simply put a coordinate. When you actually create what I call the starship construct within your mind, you have a coordinate, which is basically a vector number, which is just a series. It's like a street address. It's like 755 Hermosa or something. And then on the other side, you then have a specific time when you are going to be shown an object. So what we've done, and this is what we did while we were here, is that we got together with another friend of mine who is my friend Stacy Dean, who's who does a lot of astrology and writes a lot of articles for my newsletter.
Yes.
And we sat down, and what my friend Ben Lazzardi has done is he's put together a game called Mind Dazzle, which I think has been advertised on your show a couple of times.
That's right.
And we just simply, and what the Mind Dazzle game is, you know, there's a booklet that shows you how to do it and
sealed envelopes. Yeah,
and there's a whole series of about 300 black sealed envelopes.
Yep.
And the controller in the experiment simply takes out 4 of those envelopes, puts a number value on them, and simply says, all right, this is going to be 0, 00, 1, 2, and 3 on the board. So you've got 4 possible outcomes. And then says, okay, here's your coordinate, and at the spin of a roulette wheel at, say, exactly 11:15 p.m., you're going to then be shown an object. And
wow, that and, really pins it down.
Yeah, it totally pins it down. So what we did is the first time, we bet $1,000 actually on the first throw, and we missed because there was some confusion because I had actually felt myself. The two targets that were in confusion was...
That's all right. You don't have to explain it. You missed the first one.
We missed the first one because I'd actually drawn one target but felt myself in another. The target was an airplane, and the actual target was some kind of tower. And I actually drawn the tower but felt myself in an airplane.
It's really the results we care about. Right. You've won $11,000 out of how many throws, how many spins, rather?
The second one, we bet 1,000, and once again, it pays 2-1, so we won 3,000. Third one, we bet 1,000, won 3,000. Fourth one, we bet 1,000, won 3,000. By this time, we've been winning so much money that it got kind of weird. So then there was another push where there was some confusion between the whether or not it was one or three. And so then you still go down and you spin the wheel, but you don't bet. But you still have to see the target.
Yeah.
And then when we realized that the target was a little off and what we were doing wrong, we went back and then the sixth throw. We put 1,000 down and won another 3,000.
Well, I got to say that's landed on. I mean, if you are sure enough of your talent to come to Vegas and lay down $1,000 every time they spin the wheel, I'm impressed.
Well, it's a piece of cake. So, and actually, we would have won 12, but as I said, we lost the first one, so that was we were at 1,000, and then we pushed one. So,
well, then everybody would ask, okay, then if you can do that consistently, or even close to consistently, you could be a multimillionaire, say, over a period of a year. So why not go for it?
Well, I'm doing it. It's just, once you learn how to do it, it's like, I'm not that obsessed with money. It's just not once you actually know how to do it and you realize that you can just kind of pluck it out of the air, and this is, like I said, what I try to teach people in all the classes that I'm doing. I actually teach this exact technique.
I know, but that pile of cash, that's like a certain, it's like a drug. I mean, you said yourself, everybody was so excited.
Yeah, I'm not that affected by it. I'm like, okay, great. It allows me to maybe buy some new computer equipment and, allows me to, fix my junky old 1975 Fiat.
But how long have you been in Las Vegas now?
Just since, we came in Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
It was just the last three days.
You've won the 11 grand since Christmas Eve.
Yeah, we've just been doing two or three a day and then, it totally works. It's just, we go down, you put 1,000 down, poof, it comes up, and then you just walk away. So and then you maybe go eat dinner or do whatever it is you're gonna do, and I've been playing some cards too, and I'm pretty good at blackjack, so I start out with like 100 bucks and wind up with about 600, but it's all about, the blackjack's all about energy. You never play against redheads.
Well, no, I can get next to that idea, but I've always had a thing about redheads.
Yeah. But you don't play cards with them because they clean me out. So it's been great, and it's just been one of those things where we've been using the Mind Dazzle kit, which is literally sort of a traveling.
It is cool. It's
kit.
Very professionally done.
And it's been great stuff, and Ben Lazzardi's done a great job with it, and he's doing some great stuff with it. And I'm teaching people all across the country and. Pasadena, San Jose. I'm going to be actually here in Las Vegas on the 16th of March, and then Pasadena on January 19th, and then February 23rd is San Diego, and then March 16th is Las Vegas, and then April 27th is Phoenix, and I'll be up in San Francisco May 18th, and then June 22nd in Seattle, and people can actually call the 800 number, the 888-452-7999, to sign up. And it's $200 if you come early. It's like $150. We also have student and senior discounts. But it's a day long seminar where I try to teach the spiritual aspect, where we teach a whole series of Tibetan exercises. We have a lot of focus on remote healing. We do some projections into the future to allow people to maybe make predictions of their own lives. We do a lot of past life work along with some future life work.
What are the spiritual implications of knocking down the roulette wheel in Vegas?
Well, money is energy, and it's a form of energy.
It is.
So
it is, right.
It's just a question of drawing energy to you.
I know, but there's no possibility of a boomerang effect, is there?
Well, I suppose if you misuse it, or if you get too greedy with it, or if you go crazy. The boomerang effect is that when you get a group of people that are actually doing this spiritually, I guess, and this is what's happened with every group that I've really worked with, is that it just comes to the point of where you realize that it works, and you do start getting greedy, I guess, and that's when you actually put the lower base chakra greed aspects into it, you know, a lot of the ability just goes out the window. Outside of that, it's literally an expression of a form of energy.
All right.
And I think that everybody that is spiritual or psychic or sensitive or open to new thoughts and new ideas totally deserves to prosper.
So you've got to win in moderation.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. I mean, I think it's putting a limit on the energy of the creator, but it's because I've always believed and I've always taught or been taught that somehow God has like $1 billion that he wants to drop on somebody. It's just a question of, you know, whether or not you're ready for that kind of money and
yeah.
and that kind of success. So it's,
you said on this show, actually you called George Bush as being elected at a time when nobody ever thought in a million years that would happen. But you also said something about martial law in America.
Mm-hmm.
And while we don't have martial law, we do have really tightened security right now. I mean, really tight. I saw people taking off their shoes and putting them in scanners the other day. After
they did that at the airport coming here to Vegas.
So, well, yeah. Did they do your shoes?
Yeah, they made us take off our shoes. And then I got, for some reason, I guess I looked grumpy or something, so I got picked for special treatment. And, you know, they took me over and maybe turned my computer on, and, you know, this girl's got these big rubber gloves on ready to feel me up. And I said, well, usually people buy me dinner first before they do this. And, I had a real bad attitude because I actually stepped off and I said, no, I've gone through this 3 times. I've been x-rayed and, you know, poked and prodded. I'm not going to be felt up like some criminal. And so I finally let them pat me down so I could go through 3 hours of security to take a 45-minute flight to Las Vegas. It was really rank.
Yeah, I know. All right, so anyway, so here we are in that kind of an atmosphere, and it's not martial law, but it's partway there. Now, what do you see? Is martial law coming?
Well, you and I have a bit of a disagreement on this on this one particular point, because I'm looking at more, when I talked about George Bush and I said that, look, this guy is going to be elected president of the United States, this all I see for his administration is war, war, war.
Yep.
That we're winding up for Desert Storm 2 that I talked about, and a lot of these comments that I made were months before he was elected, and I think I was one of the only people, even when I saw it on the TV and they said, well, Al Gore is president of the United States.
No, I remember.
They're in shock.
I remember how well you called that.
No way it's going to
No argument.
Out.
I remember.
What I'm looking at is a lot of the legal ramifications, which I cannot see. A lot of, for example, the Patriot Act that they've just passed, and a lot of the institutions that have now allowed Bush to try immigrants and even citizens under military tribunals within the United States. And when you're actually looking at it from a legal and technical standpoint, just reading the brief of the ACLU before they passed the Patriot Act, of their series of objections to the Patriot Act. I mean, we're talking about now the videotaping and taping of attorney-client, the violation of attorney-client privilege. We're talking about police organizations cannot be denied warrants for whatever reason by judges under this new law. We're talking about citizens, whether they be immigrants or whether or not they be U.S. citizens, being tried in secret by military tribunals.
Okay, so are you now making the case that martial law is effectively here now?
When you actually look at the Patriot Act and look at the military tribunals, absolutely yes, because we're talking about a suspension of the Constitution, and we are now talking about an American president that has been given, shall I say, no British or American leader has been given this kind of power since Henry VIII or Oliver Cromwell. I mean, literally since the Magna Carta and King John, George Bush now has more power to basically to arrest people, to close down public demonstrations, to basically, I mean, the Patriot Act violates the First, the Second, the Fourth, the Fifth, I mean, every amendment you can think of. So, I mean, even though, yes, there's not tanks rolling down the streets, my psychic vision of the country being under martial law, certainly, I mean, every single one of the airports
is
got fatigues, and I think that's what's coming down. Now, will it get worse?
Yes, will
it? I think so. I think we're still looking at chemical attacks on the United States. I mean, I'm not looking at the dire predictions of, should I say, yet in 2002. But I'm also a person that thinks that time and energy and the nature of the future actually pools into into a series of probabilities and possibilities, and those are either then triggered,
right.
They then dissipate to maybe the next pocket.
Sean, right now, a lot of Americans are watching us essentially mop up at this point in Afghanistan, and they're thinking it's probably pretty much over.
Well, if you remember when I was talking about this in, I was trying to get the exact day, but I think I was on the show September 28th, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was right before my birthday, I think. And I said this whole thing will be over by February, as far as, and I think we actually exchanged little words about that, because I said the terrorism will go on for a wider period of time, because I said then that we're still going to go after Saddam. So we're looking at Desert Storm 2, and right now, as a fulfillment of that prediction is that we've got 30,000 U.S. troops now massing in Kuwait.
Well, a possible fulfillment is tonight's headline on the Associated Press is that the president is contemplating 2002, and one of the things he's contemplating is the next terror target, the next people we will, or country, I suppose, that we will target for terror.
Oh, that's Saddam. It's, you know, who else is it going to be? It's Desert Storm 2.
Well,
You're seeing a 12-year pattern completely repeat itself. You remember 12 years ago, George Bush the first became president in the Chinese Year of the Snake. His first war was with Panama. The second war was with, we're now moving into the Chinese Year of the Horse. And in the Year of the Horse, we'll actually talk a lot about, later on in the program, we'll talk about, all the various things that are going to happen in this 12-year cycle in regards to the whole horse year that's coming up. But 12 years ago, you actually had, in August of 90, you had Saddam invading Kuwait. And then, of course, January 15th of 91 was when, was when Desert Storm began, all Year of the Horse stuff. So we have not only the same pattern repeating itself, but with the exact same players. I mean, you've got Rumsfeld, you've got Dick Cheney, who was Secretary of Defense.
It is the same,
it's the same group.
Yep.
And this is the dissension. One of the things you need to watch now is going to be the dissension within the Bush administration, because already you're seeing Colin Powell, who says, nope, we don't want to go into Iraq, or no, we don't have any plans to go into Iraq, with Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld basically disagreeing with him and sort of disenfranchising, even not going so far as not dividing the meeting.
This level of disagreement usually results ultimately in somebody getting sacked or walking off the job.
It's quite conceivable now at this point that could probably be Colin Powell. Which
so you think if they decide in the administration to go after Iraq, Colin will walk or get canned?
I think it's possible.
No, I don't think politically they could get away with canning him. That'd probably be a bad move. He'd resign for some sort of something.
Well, he's the one man that I've noticed that's completely out of the loop now. He's been completely disenfranchised. He's not being invited to meetings. His opinion is not being taken into consideration.
What about Cheney?
Cheney's the man. I mean, he's the brains behind most of this operation. I mean, he's a brilliant guy. He was the former Secretary of Defense, as you know. He was, I think, Chief of Staff at like 34. He's also one of the few people that actually, he came up back in 1991-92 in all of our investigations into Area 51 because, one of the guards, that we had interviewed, this guy Ghost Walker, that was, God, if you remember back that far, if you remember that whole thing. Ghost Walker had actually directly identified Dick Cheney as actually not only being out at Area 51, but he claimed, I never saw them, but he claimed that he actually had a series of photos in his possession that actually had Cheney in the S-4 hangar actually looking at the UFOs, and it supposedly had actually been taken down to Level 5, what they call the ambassadorial suites at Area 51, to supposedly not communicate with, but actually look at a live alien being that they had prisoner there. And it was interesting because if you actually, during the presidential campaign, there was a fellow who stood up and said, Mr. Bush, are you going to be the disclosure candidate in regards to UFOs?
Huh.
And, of course, Bush pointed his finger at Cheney and said, well, you want to know about UFOs? There's a man to talk to right there. He knows everything about them. Of course, Cheney's eyes just go wide as saucers. And they, I don't think I can make a comment on that.
Boy, I sure would like a look at Area 51, inside Area 51.
No, it's
I'd love to see it with my own eyes.
Well, watch Dick Cheney and watch the biggest thing is going to be Lynn Cheney. You're going to see her on the news quite a bit, and Lynn Cheney is going to be, one of the major players in deciding, shall we say, the rest of Dick Cheney's political career.
All right, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. Sean David Morton is here. I'm Art Bell. from the high desert, a little town called Pahrump. This is Coast to Coast AM.
She's got something that moves my soul, and she knows I love to love her, but she lets me down every time. Can't make her mine. She's no one's lover tonight. With me, she'll be so.
Back now to Las Vegas, where he's winning money, and Sean David Morton. Sean, you're back on the air.
Live from Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, live from Caesar's.
actually, let's dispense with Osama bin Laden once and for all here. I'll tell you what I've got on him, and then we'll be done with him because we've just talked about him so much. Very interesting, because the astrological chart for Osama bin Laden for July 30th, 1957, cast for 12 p.m. In Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Very interesting. I mean, it does show his death and demise coming up. I had figured that the entire Afghanistan thing and much of the Afghan thing would be finished as of February. The biggest thing you have to look for as far as what's going on with Al-Qaeda and the whole terrorist network is you got to watch Egypt and assassination attempts against Mubarak in Egypt. They've just actually burned down a number of Christian churches in Egypt, so it's very much getting out of hand there. And most of the money and the really fanatical followers outside of Afghanistan and Pakistan are Egyptian. So that's one of the things you have to watch. As far as bin Laden goes, looking at his chart, the guy totally thinks he's a god. He truly believes himself to be some kind of messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Control, power, manipulation, completely ruthless. He's got a whole series of things in Virgo. I also believe that he was gone, that he was actually out of the section of Pakistan where we're hunting for him before the first bomb actually came in. The specific times for him, and there's two probable futures here.
Where do you believe he is now?
Right now, I think he's in. I think that he's gone into. Let me see if I can say it. Kyrgyzstan, and I think that he's near. He's in a specific area called Pamir. It's a little bit. It's probably about 300 miles south of Tajikistan. But
okay.
He's going to move. He's actually north and east of where everybody thinks he is now. I don't know what the hell they're doing in Tora Bora, but he's moved up into Kyrgyzstan. If I'm saying it right, here.
They think they cut off his escape routes and pinned him in Tora Bora.
It's not true because I don't think he's there. I think he left before the first bomb dropped. And the two times that he's going to be the most vulnerable. And as I said, there's two probabilities and timelines here to watch between January 19th and about February 8th of 2002 is when he's going to be vulnerable. His biggest thing is that they finally managed to actually freeze most of his money. His money was mixed in. Of course, the bin Laden family has had a lot of, they're a construction family. It's a very large family. They've had direct associations with the Rockefellers.
Saudi money, yeah.
Also with the Carlyle Trust, with the Rockefeller Trust in Chicago, which was one of the reasons why they couldn't track it, because it was actually all dealt up with a lot of American interest. But they finally did manage to freeze his funds. But he'll be very active and on the move. I also get, and this is just my psychic sense of him, the problem with moving him around is that his health is very bad. His kidneys, liver, it's the lower back, possibly the prostate, but there's a very serious malfunction of his health. And
we don't want him to die naturally now.
Well, he's going to die a violent, rather public death, but it's going to have to do with, like I said, if we don't get him by the 8th of February, the next time that he's going to be on the moon and vulnerable, and I think what you're going to see is that he's going to move down from the northeast area where he's at, which is specifically the Kyrgyzstan, I think is how it's pronounced, directly down into the Gilgit area in North Pakistan. And if we don't get him by the 8th of February, between the 19th and February 8th, then the next major possibility where he'll be vulnerable and also be very public will be right about the first part of May.
All right.
So
big question in American minds would be, before we get him or after we get him, what do we have to look forward to here?
Well, he's...
Can he get us?
There's plan. I mean, I think most of his network there has been destroyed, and it's all individuals now. I mean, I think he dies. I see him dying a very violent, sudden, but unexpected death. But I think he's turned in, specifically when he moves into Pakistan. Somebody kills him either for a reward or, I mean, there's some kind of betrayal that's directly involved. Someone where he's staying with or someone he trusts actually turns him into, I think, Pakistani authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Musharraf that actually goes after him. And I think it's the Pakistanis and Musharraf that actually kill him. But I think that this leads to greater and grander repercussions, because my other prediction is that you'll see the complete destabilization of Musharraf's regime. He was actually put in there by the American CIA and by British intelligence, MI6, after the Pakistanis got nuclear weapons.
All right, well, that brings me to another point. Pakistan and India tonight are on the verge of war. I mean, they're really close. It could go either way. They're on the verge of war, and they both have nuclear weapons now.
Right.
What do you say about that?
Well, my prediction, and going all the way back to August of 1994, and I actually reprinted it because I felt it was important enough to send out to everybody in something called the Vajra Chronicle. So we reprinted it and sent it out to all the Delphi subscribers in October. In 1994, I said that the opening of World War III would occur when Pakistan attacks India with troops and nuclear weapons. Now, of course, this was 94. The Pakistanis had as much chance of getting nuclear weapons as monkeys typing Shakespeare at that time. And now we're looking at two nuclear superpowers across the border of each other.
Yeah.
I still believe that, of course, the Indians are now blaming the Pakistanis for the attack on the
British Parliament. So, in other words, you stand by that prediction.
Oh, yeah. But if I already know that the prediction's going to happen, where I see that the opening of this world war actually happens with a nuclear exchange between Pakistan and India in the northern part of India, then that means a number of things that have to happen for that to come through. Number one, Musharraf is not going to let that happen. He is not going to attack India first with nuclear weapons. I think that this particular situation is going to be resolved, that there's going to be a huge crackdown on the fundamentalist groups by Musharraf. Remember, before they were fighting over Kashmir, and are continuing to fight over Kashmir.
Right.
Well, I still think you've got another, I think there's at least by another year, possibly 2 years before this happens. But Musharraf has to be out of power. And remember, too, that if you actually destabilize Musharraf and the rabid fundamentalist Muslims take over Pakistan again, you now once again have a fundamentalist Islamic state with direct access to nuclear weapons.
Right.
And, of course, thanks to, if you remember when Clinton bombed that baby food factory in Afghanistan the same day that Monica Lewinsky, and with the Monica missiles, as they called it,
I remember.
The day Monica Lewinsky did her did her deal. The Pakistanis, one of those cruise missiles went off course, landed in Pakistan, and so now they have one of our most advanced missiles. You know, I made a comment on the show the last time. It's sort of like Roswell, like a UFO falling out of the sky.
It is.
They have a cruise missile to take apart, and maybe put a nuclear weapon on top of. But that's the trigger. That's the trigger for the next great world conflict is going to be that nuclear
that exchange. Is going to be the beginning of World War III.
Yes, sir. And I said that.
How do you imagine, let's say there was the kind of nuclear exchange between those two countries. How does it get from there in a world where the Soviet bloc has disintegrated?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they've still got their nukes, but economically they're in total disintegration.
Right.
The Chinese have nuclear weapons, but they seem hopefully disinclined to use them. North Korea has them, but they probably can't get them here that easily. How does that ratchet from, you know, a simple... shouldn't call it simple, a nuclear exchange between Pakistan and India into a full world war?
Well, it'll be directly, I mean, it's phase one. It'll be directly contained, but you're talking about some kind of intervention by Russia, some kind of intervention by China, who all have interest in that particular area. Troops amassing in Tibet, specifically possibly coming into Nepal, or maybe using that as an excuse for an invasion of Nepal, which would then trigger something by the United States. A world war now, if you're actually looking at it in terms of the whole sort of new world order that's been established here, I mean, Desert Storm was a world war. There were something like 60 countries that were directly involved in that.
Sort of.
You're also looking at, as I said, with Pakistan, the biggest thing being that this will be one of the triggers that then unites the Islamic world. And the last great war, because we're talking about a 7-year period of conflict here. My prediction had originally been that we would go through a 7-year peace cycle from September 14th of 1993 to September 14th of 2000. That would be our 7-year expanding economic peace cycle. And then from 2000 to approximately 2006, you would then see a 7-year war cycle in the United States with a Republican president as, one of the major leaders in a war cycle like this.
And this culminates in our becoming involved. Obviously, you said Third World War. That
right.
means we would have to be involved.
Well, I don't see, with an exchange of nuclear weapons, and you're talking about with as many people as there are in India, how the United States could not become involved.
I agree.
Which means that
ultimately,
we would directly take on a radical fundamentalist state, which means going toe-to-toe with, once again, Iraq, Iran, possibly Egypt, the destabilization there. And remember, I keep talking about that you've got Saddam, you had Osama, and I think that there's a third leader that's going to link the Muslim world together, who's going to come specifically out of Iran, who'll be some kind of religious leader that'll be the third great Antichrist figure that Nostradamus is constantly talking about, the man in the blue turban, the Persian prince. Iran's been very, very quiet through this entire thing.
All right. If we are to face a world nuclear war of some sort, how bad is it? How many casualties are there? How many continents are left in ruins? Is the world covered in nuclear winter? I mean,
No. Like I said, the nuclear exchange part of this will be the exchange. I mean, we're talking mostly ground troops, and the nuclear exchange will just be between Pakistan and India. As far as a global conflict going with the United States being involved there, we're still talking about a fairly conventional war. As far as attacks here in the United States, I mean, I could say that the next major attack I see in the U.S., and I'm not talking about sabotage planes or...
Okay, I just want to really qualify what you mean by world war. I mean, America...
A world war being a Desert Storm-style world war. A world war being the United States
okay.
with a series of...
All right, not the U.S. exchanging a full exchange with Russia or whatever.
Correct.
Nothing like that.
I don't see, and I've said this over and over and over again, I don't see the next massive world conflict, I mean, a major world conflict, like, you know, nuclear weapons and nuclear winter, et cetera, occurring until... I do believe that the United States will go to war with Red China, but not until late 2017 and 2020. And that's even a future that I'm hoping through possibly engagement and through consciousness and through increased communication and understanding may be a future that can still be averted. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. The next phase is going to be the 7-year war with Islam. And then, you know, remember, too, we've got a lot of earth change stuff coming up as well. Everybody's only focusing on terrorism and... You know, I've said that we don't have that much to worry about from the earth changes.
Now, I understand, before you get off on that, I understand, really I do, that we are subject of propaganda in this country. I mean, we propagandize our own people. Every government on earth does it, and we're really good at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Well, right now, the propaganda is saying that, you know, after the last tape was released and Osama was talking about, joking about, you know, some of the hijackers not even knowing what they were doing until they got blown up when they hit the buildings and that sort of thing, it looked like the absolute smoking gun in the news I began to get, might be propaganda, was that even the Muslim world was pretty well disgusted with bin Laden, and so it. How do you get from there to a war, you know, a war between religions, really?
I just know that it happens. The only other thing that I can think of would be
but
possibly...
But that would mean he'd win the propaganda war somehow, or that he is winning it, and we're being fed a bunch of crap.
Well, he is considered a hero by the pretty substantial sections of the Muslim world. We're talking Shiite Muslims mostly, who still make up 80% of the population of Iran, almost 100% of the population of Iran, about 85% of the population of Iraq,
okay,
close to 95% of the population of Saudi Arabia.
All right, so you're saying a lot of those people that we think were disgusted when they saw the tape probably were cheering.
Yes, and it's going to get worse with those people. And another thing is going to be also in the coming year is that Israel is going to be at full-scale war with the PLO. And I think also directly in conflict with Jordan and Syria. And I think that Ariel Sharon is going to take, and this is, once again, this seems like a Captain Obvious right. prediction now, but last October when I said that Ariel Sharon is going to be elected the Prime Minister of Israel, that there were going to be a series of horrific actions taken by, well, both the Israelis and the Palestinians against each other, which was going to lead to this whole new phase, that phase one was going to be Ariel Sharon and what's going on with the PLO. Phase two would then be a series of terrorist attacks against the United States. And this was like, we're talking like October of 2000, I was talking about this. Terrorist attacks against the United States, which will then lead to, I think, possibly the Israelis or something happening to the Dome of the Rock. I mean, that's going to be the big trigger. And, of course, everybody you talk to that's familiar with most biblical prophecy will tell you that if the Dome of the Rock gets destroyed, then Israel wants to rebuild the third Temple of Solomon there on the Dome, that particular section of that mosque.
That's right.
Which would then trigger a lot more, you know, a consolidation of the Islamic world. You know, the only thing I might be able to say about this is that maybe the best case scenario would be is that the horrific and heinous way that the attacks on New York were carried out have maybe disenfranchised this ideology, have maybe taken the steam out of some of what I'm seeing. I'm not saying that communication, and I'm not saying that spirit can't change very specific things. So it's but as far as the global conflict aspects of this go, it's just a major trend of the next 7 years that we're going to go through. And if you see the United States going head to head against Iraq, which, you know, is, I guess, what you would call an actual terrorist state, not a bunch of guys running around in the mountains of Afghanistan. You know, Saddam Hussein does have the ability to blow up planes and blow up bridges, and mm-hmm. Yeah, he does have a couple of nuclear weapons. I mean, that's one of the things I don't want to tell you. He's got 4 nuclear weapons, but only 2 of them actually work. But none of these people have missiles. None of these people have guidance systems. The biggest thing is that if George W. Bush thinks that he's going to complete what his father started and go after Baghdad, we built that place. I mean, the United States, during the Iran-Iraq war, when we came down in that war on Saddam's side, there are defenses that, I mean, rings around rings, underground bunkers and weapons that we gave them that...
Well, we should know where the bunkers are then,
yeah,
huh?
That we're going to go directly into the teeth of. So that's a whole other story, and that's probably why Colin Powell is backing off on this whole idea of getting Saddam. But
I think Dick Cheney's solidly behind it.
Yeah, because it's just, I don't see how they can't not do it with all the rhetoric they've been ratcheting up about, well, we're going to smoke them out and we have to go after the terrorist state.
All right, hold it. Bottom of the hour.
All right.
Sean,
we've got a bunch of these predictions that I just want to go off in a list
up
here.
All right, coming up, I'm Art Bell.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
Well, all right. Back now to Sean David Morton. Sean, if you have a bunch of predictions, especially specific ones that you want to get out and on the record, boy, is this ever the time.
Okay, so here we go. Are we going till 2 o'clock tonight?
Correct.
Okay, all right, great. So let me get this out so we can take some calls here. All right, first off, we're moving into the year of the horse now. The last year of the horse was January 27th of 1990 to February 14th of 1991. Horse years have a sense of energy, vitality, and freedom. So there'll be a very much an expansionist feel this year with an upturn of a lot of key industries as well as a much more positive economy. There's going to be a whole series of significant new trade agreements that, well, could be good or bad. I think they're going to cause riots in the streets all over the world, but it's going to have to do with the empowerment of the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, GATT, the various G7 economies, the empowerment of a global and world court that will make a lot of very unpopular decisions in regards to the ecology and especially third world nations. There's going to be a huge increase in consumer spending, especially in home improvements, electronics, sports, and communications. So I'll talk about some specific stocks, and in next month's Delphi Associates newsletter, I'm going to run some Elliott waves and give specific stocks. But you know, you're looking at Home Depot, you're looking at Best Buy, you're looking at Sony Communications, you're looking at, and I talked a little bit about the whole cell phone revolution and communications revolution that's going to happen with companies like Nokia and Ericsson. So a lot of these, Motorola, so a lot of these major, major cell phone companies are going to start going through the roof. And I'll talk specifically about, give like a specific date as to when that's going to improve as well.
Okay.
So the stock markets are going to improve. The last horse year, 12 years ago, the Dow hit 3,000 and actually was the beginning of the 12-year upward spiral for the markets, actually. Landmark developments in film and television. Of course, you've got you've got Austin Powers 3 coming out. You've got Star Wars coming out in May. You've just had Lord of the Rings come out. So it's going to be a record year for film and television. Also, new technologies for film and television. They're going to be going from film cameras to digital, more and more digital cameras specifically.
Oh, yes.
Increases in the digital technology. You know, we'll probably see the beginning of the end of film, and also a whole new series of high definition television standards that will finally be adopted. And various networks and major corporations will start bringing in high-definition television and improvements in that field.
Boy, that would be nice.
Politics are going to move at lightning speed. I think that, and this is, I think, a major prediction for the year, is that the Republicans will take back the Senate this year. I don't think it comes to the elections. I think it comes through either a Democratic senator dying or resigning, with a Republican governor actually appointing another senator. But the shift of power in the House, that was when Jeffords kind of betrayed the Republican Party and shifted
right.
it back to the Democrats. That's going to change as well, because the Republicans are going to take control of the House again.
Okay.
Once again, 12 years ago, very unstable, because areas flare up with one country invading another. So you can look at invasions. You can look at either Pakistan invading Kashmir, the United States invading Iran. It's going to be a big year for one country invading another country. Of course, 12 years ago was the collapse of the Berlin Wall. Nelson Mandela was released. Margaret Thatcher's government fell, which I think is another trend for England. I think there's going to be such a huge backlash in England against the euro and a lot of the European Union that I think you're finally going to see Tony Blair voted out.
How is the euro going to do?
Well, not well. I mean, the three countries that rejected it were Denmark, Sweden, and the UK. I mean, this is the establishment, this is phase one of a massive kind of global New World Order deal, where they want three currencies. The overall plan economically is to establish the euro dollar, or the ECU, the European currency unit, for all of Europe and Eastern Europe, and then have the Federal Reserve note here in both the United States, Canada, and then all of South America. So you have the Fed note from pole to pole in what I've been calling for years the North American Union, or what eventually I think the United States.
Yeah, I can foresee all that, but I can't see Asia getting together. They're nowhere close.
Because what will happen is that the Chinese yuan is going to be the currency that they want to be able to adapt there. And, you know, once again, we're talking about, with 2002, the Rockefellers and the Kissingers and these guys were bragging that they would have complete economic control of the world by 2002. Whether or not that's really happened yet, I can't really say, but that's the overall plan, is to have the Chinese yuan dominate the foreign currencies in Asia, have the Federal Reserve note for all of North and South America, and then have the ECU, and then of course then merge that into kind of a one world
sure.
economic money state.
I can see how it's headed. I just don't see Asia there yet at all.
Well, I've said for years that I still think that Korea's going to reunite, even though nobody thought that was going to be likely. And I think that the yen is going to, I think the Japanese economy is going to slide right into the sea.
Certainly possible.
The yen is sliding against the dollar. The yuan is getting much bigger. I mean, they'll go where the money is.
Sure.
And China
sure,
is now set
sure.
to become the factory of the world.
I don't disagree.
And of course, we've shipped our industry over to China, lock, stock, and barrel. And, you know, and of course, in the shadow of the 9/11 attacks, they snuck China into the World Trade Organization. So,
no, the regional economic coalitions you suggest are logical, actually underway right now.
Right.
So, yeah.
As far as the environment goes, we're going to see a whole series of very major accidents that are going to have to do with oil tankers. 12 years ago, the Amoco Cadiz off the coast of Brittany spilled 220,000 tons of oil. So you have to watch the Brittany coast, watch off the coast of France, also watch the North Sea of England, and also Alaska again for some massive ecological disasters in the forms of oil tankers being disposed. And also disposal of toxic waste right where you are. There's going to be another big controversy because, our boys over at Area 51 have said, well, hey, you got a bunch of toxic waste, dump it here.
Mm.
Nobody can do anything to us because we're above the law. So if you got some nuclear junk, if you got some biochemical stuff, just bring it on down.
They actually are above the law, aren't
yeah.
they?
So there's going to be another big brouhaha in the central part of Nevada about, and I think what's going to happen is that the various states that the waste travels through are not going to allow them to actually use their roads to.
Well, then, good. How's it going to get here? Ha, 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 ha.
Exactly. So Physical achievements, the 4-minute mile was broken 12 years ago. K2 was climbed for the first time, the first balloon crossing of the Atlantic. So, lots of sports records this year. At the Salt Lake City Olympics, I think, lots of endurance records as well. Let's talk about the economy a little bit, because I see the economy actually amping up in the next year. I think that also means the NFC wins the Super Bowl. So you can pretty much see I think it's going to be the Rams and the Raiders, with the Rams winning the Super Bowl, which is, I think, a given now.
And you're ignoring Pittsburgh and all of these other...
The Rams are going to kill them. It's, okay.
I meant, look at the Raiders. The Raiders have a very good record, but Pittsburgh has gone bananas.
No, they're good. I say it's going to be the NFC. You watch.
Okay.
It will not
be. All right.
Every year the AFC wins the Super Bowl, the economy just tanks. And, of course, last year the Ravens won, and the economy just went right in the tank. So,
okay.
So watch for the NFC to win. So whoever the NFC team is going to be. It also means when the economy goes up, the return of miniskirts, new musical artists.
I'm all for that.
There's a lot of miniskirts and midriffs. Also, you're going to see, I think, revolutionarily, 12 years ago was the first test tube baby. So now you're going to see, I think, a human clone this year, probably done offshore somewhere, possibly in international waters on some kind of research vessel. But it's something in the water on a boat where human cloning is actually going to be done.
Oh, yes. And scientists are now leaving the United States in anticipation of laws that will not allow them to do it here, but it surely is going to be done. So you're going to say, this is the year we will see the first.
And I think it's not, once you have one, I think it's then going to be, not only that, you've got the new Star Wars movie called Attack of the Clones. Literally, 2002 is going to be the Attack of the Clones, because I think once you do one, you're going to see clones, and I'm not just cloning around here. So you're going to see clones, I think, everywhere starting to pop up. Let me see. So that pretty much covers that part. Major change in the British government. Okay, we're also looking at the Dow Jones.
Oh, yes.
I still think there's two specific things here. First off, in regards to the NASDAQ, the specific date you guys need to watch for the NASDAQ, and this is actually an astrological reading on the markets. Usually what I do is that on specific dates, I can predict where the market's going to be.
Right.
There's an Elliott wave curve that's used. There's also an astrological charting of it that I use. But also, you can also use remote viewing, specifically the remote viewing classes that I teach, to predict the outcome of certain stocks on a particular day or in a particular month as to whether or not the stocks are going to be high, very high, low, or very low.
Okay.
You can also use it with gold and silver as well. The NASDAQ specifically is going to flounder a bit, and then there's going to be these remarkable new... these huge new fluxes in communications technologies that are specifically going to come in June of 2002. I see it a little earlier, but I see it, I'll just say June, between April, May, and June of 2002. Here's the biggest thing that I think is the most remarkable about this. Saturn, which is the planet that rules large companies, corporations, institutions, governments, that even though we've got what's called a Saturn-Pluto opposition, which is what fractures governments, attacks on governments, terrorist attacks, individual attacks on government. But in 2002, Saturn moves into the third house, and the third house is ruled by Gemini. And we talked a little bit about Gemini and how Gemini, I feel, has changed from going from the twins to now being represented as the Stargate. And you can even look at it as the World Trade Center towers representing the twin towers, what we call it's called the lower mind, but it's not really the lower mind. It just means the rational mind, you can say. How that concept has now been blown to now the next phase being the Stargate. And what's happening is that in 2002, when Saturn moves into the third house of the NASDAQ, and this is all the way up through about 2005, Gemini the twins, this is going to open a Stargate of information. This is going to be informational systems that will increase brain power. We're talking about a...
basic change in humanity.
Yeah, a change in humanity. The thing is that 2002, it's a bridge year. It's a year in which the trends of 2001 continue and everything is going to be established. It's like the four corners of the base of a pyramid laying out what's going to occur in 2003, 2004, 2005. 2003 is going to see one of the greatest influxes in human consciousness I think in history. I think that you're now looking at a series of technologies, what I call Stargate technologies, where you're going to be seeing on the darker, I guess, more horrific biblical prophecy side. On the one hand, you're going to be start seeing a chipping of the population. You've already got a company called ADS, which is Applied Digital Solutions. On the front page of the LA Times, December 19th, they actually had an article literally talking about chipping large sections of the population,
mm-hmm.
and saying that people's attitudes towards this have now changed because of the 9-1-1 attacks, and that people are not that they're more open to having these chips put under their skin, like a dog or a cat. Applied Digital Solutions basically says, well, we have the chip, and
oh, I'm sure.
What they originally,
but not me. I mean, I'm nowhere close to it.
Well, what they originally use it for is it's a whole program called Digital Angel.
Oh, I know what it'll do.
Right. And they use it for tracking Alzheimer's patients. So if, you know, Ronald Reagan wanders off somewhere in Bel Air, they know where to find him, I guess. So the idea behind this is that now they're talking about the chips. And as I said, front page of the LA Times talked about saying, well, it doesn't hold a lot of information, and but we can still put a Social Security number on there. We can still put a series of numbers. And this is going to be the biggest thing. I mean, there are literally going to be people who are going to revolt, who are going to start forming communities to not have to take literally the mark of the beast as it's coming up. But 2003 is also going to see technology that I think, and this is, let me make an outrageous statement here, that's going to see technology that will literally break down the barriers between fourth and fifth dimensional space, that we're going to see direct somehow technological communication with whether or not it's extraterrestrials or angels or people in the spirit world.
Yeah.
We're going to see chip technology that can be directly implanted in the hypothalamus of the human brain that will actually increase the signals between the right and the left sections of the brain that will increase, they'll start calling it fluidic intelligence, so that your IQ can actually be amped to well over 1,000 and above. And this
wow.
is... This is the most remarkable thing that I see out of 2003, is that after this year and the technological developments here, 2003 is going to see such a gigantic outpouring of spirit and spiritual communities and people who are basically just going to turn away from the material world and literally begin an entire, I guess you'd call it, alternative civilization that's going to be based on things of the spirit rather than things of the material, which is going to be, as I said, the paradigm for what I see coming as far as maybe the kingdom of heaven that I keep talking about here in the United States. Let me see. Okay. I have to say this every year. The Pope dies. I say that every year, and I'm always wrong. And I think if I don't say it, I think he might actually die. So, okay, the Pope dies.
he has really hung on.
Oh, boy,
happy
has
boy,
he.
Has he hung on.
Once again, we'll talk about that. If he goes, here's the one thing he has to do before
he
goes.
You do occasionally get them wrong, right?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, the Pope is the classic example. I mean, this guy's, he's going to be a head in a jar saying, tell Sean Morton I'm still alive, damn him. But he's got to go to Russia. That's going to be the biggest, I think, his greatest goal. And there have been Russian and Greek Orthodox priests who have stopped him from going to Russia because that's the fulfillment. I think he literally thinks his life mission now is to go to Russia because that is the direct fulfillment of the Fatima prophecies that he saw when he... didn't even do it right, but he technically consecrated Russia in like 1987. And about, you know, some 2 years later, you then had the Berlin Wall fall and the entire Russian complex fall. The whole Soviet bloc fell. He now directly believes, I think, after his conversations with Sister Lucia, that if he goes to Russia, that he may be able to bring some kind of world peace and some kind of change in Russia.
The so-called release of the third secret of Fatima,
right?
Not complete, was it?
I think it was. I do think it was complete because you actually had Sister Lucia talk about it. I think their interpretation was completely wrong, and I think that Ratzinger came out and spun it because I think it leads directly to the last pope. And as I said, I was one of the first people to make the prediction that Carlo Martini was going to be the next pope after him. Malachi actually had some direct predictions about, and Nostradamus had some intimations of them having a, quote, black pope. It's not going to be like an African pope. Carlo Martini, I believe, is a Jesuit. And so his robe of office would literally be black, unlike the pope's, which is white now. So that would be his robe of office for his order. So Carlo Martini will be the next pope. He'll be called either Leo the 16th, and Malachi calls him the Pope of the Glorious Olive Branch. So, and then, of course, then the last pope, and this is, you know, known in every prophecy circle, then becomes Petrus Romanus or Peter of Rome. But I see Carlo Martini probably ruling for about, about 7 years, 7 to 8 years or so. And he's actually fairly young. And then the last pope being Petrus Romanus or Peter of Rome. That's all the prophecies of Malachi, and which you're more familiar with than anybody else. So anyway, watch for him to visit Russia. I think a lot of the walls will come down. And I think after he visits Russia, I think he'll feel that his function in life, his purpose, his final peace mission has been fulfilled.
It is as though he is hanging on by sheer absolute willpower. I mean, keeping himself alive with willpower for some reason.
And I think it may be the prayers of the world as well. But I think it's this visit to Russia. I think he literally feels that if he can visit Russia, that he could fulfill the predictions of Fatima and bring peace to the world. And that was one of the things that the Mother Mary insisted on over and over and over again with the Fatima children and with Sister Lucia throughout the years about, you know, why haven't they done what I said? Why don't they consecrate Russia? Why all these things, all these evils on the planet are going to come out of Russia and the Soviets and the communists. You have to do something about it. And so finally, as I said, they finally did it in 1987. And
are you predicting this will be successful? That he will get to Russia, in fact, and that he will, in fact, bring peace?
Well, we'll see what happens. I think that if Russia...
Because on the one hand, you're talking to us about the wars that lay directly ahead. On the other, you're saying, well, this could happen.
Well, Art, there is an alternative path here. I mean, there is a path of... On the one hand, I know what's going to happen because there are three paths. There's the downward path, there's the material path, and there's the upward path. It's very much like the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I do think that there are ways we can soften it, very much like taking your exams freshman, sophomore year rather than waiting until the last minute to drag yourself over the coals and cram for some great test. I more than anybody think that prophecy, if I did not think the prophecy could be changed, and if I did not think the predictions could be changed, and if I did not think that there was some way that we could actually bring about a peaceful, literally kingdom of heaven on earth through warning people about what was going on, I wouldn't bother. I mean, you know, why would I care? If I was
that
a fatalist.
That is a very, very interesting concept. Hold on right there. We're at the top of the hour. In other words, if he really felt that everything he said was in concrete, then he wouldn't bother. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit. That's very interesting. In other words, one reason to be here and talk of these prophecies is perhaps to give some little spark to the side that might prevent it all. That gets me back to my original thing, which I'll ask about when we get back, and that is, if you predict something dire, and then you say, but there's another way it could go. Well, I don't know. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, Sean, do you understand that on the one hand, I understand what you just said coming up to the top of the hour, that if prophecy was a locked-in thing, and you could predict it, and it would absolutely happen, that there'd hardly be any point in what you do. On the other hand, the skeptics, you know, the cops out there, psychops, those type people, they're going to say, look, it's just an out that somebody like Sean Morton or, you know, people like him use, on the one hand, predicting something fairly awful can happen, but on the other, saying it's not the only path. And if we get our act together, we can prevent it. And so when it's prevented, they can say, see, we prevented it. So you sort of win either way. That's what they say, Sean.
Well, I keep pointing out the book of Jonah, the prophet Jonah as an example of this, is that Jonah was a prophet who was sent to the city of Nineveh, who was told to preach to the people of Nineveh,
right,
and that they were going to be destroyed. And he was a guy with a track record who went to the middle of town, took off all his clothes, burned him, rolled himself in the ashes, and then put on a sack and took him 3 days to walk across Nineveh. And of course, this is now modern-day Iraq, and the people listened to him and actually averted the catastrophe. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I know that there are long-term... that, as I said, there is a long-term, I guess you would call it a messianic plan. And I think the best way to look at that is to look at the wisdom of the ancients through the Great Pyramid of Giza, through the Mayans at the Great Pyramid of Chichen Itza in Central America, that does show that there is some great plan for humanity. But the best way that I can, here's the best way I can describe it. You and I have both been down into what's called the Chamber of the Ordeal, or the Pit, which is the chamber beneath the Great Pyramid of Giza.
You bet.
And as you crawl up out of that tunnel, that's right about the year 1900 or so, if you look at the time coding in the pyramid. And right at the edge of the lip of the pit, where the time coding says the bottom falls out of the world, that the edge of that pit, and it kind of telescopes down, is 2004 to 2005, when humanity falls into some great, dire disaster, if you will, that will be economic, that will be biologic, that quite conceivably might be nuclear. But at the same time, the intimation of the prophecy is that those who are informed and those who are, of the light, or who learn the truth and turn right towards God or towards the Creator, towards knowledge, towards spirit, will actually find a way to move around the pit and actually get up into the, there's some lumps and bumps and things up by the, up in the corner on the far right side, but that they'll actually be able to avoid the, being washed into this great disaster. Of course, then something else comes along in 2012, which is intimated by a section of the structure, which is a huge trough, which looks like it has seven kind of like spinal knots going up it, that's called the River of Fire. So, I mean, there is a grand plan, and I do think that this is the last 40-year age, and this is not just me saying this. I mean, this is the Mayans and the Egyptians and the Incans and God knows who else.
I know.
That this period of time is important from an aspect of consciousness, from an aspect of physical changes, and I think it's all leading up to the birth of some great messianic figure sometime around the year 2034 or 2040, and that this is a 40-year, what I call the Exodus period that we're going through, which will actually prepare the planet for the bestowal of some grand messianic figure about 40 years from now.
All right, here come the calls.
Okay.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is John from Goodland, Minnesota.
Hi, John.
Sean, last time you were on, you kind of affirmed Art and Whitley's idea of the coming global superstorm, mm-hmm. maybe about 2012 or something.
Right.
I think it's time for Art or someone to write a sequel. Surviving the Superstorm. I think a lot of pockets of people, like up here in Minnesota, are not going to flee when the power goes out and the wind even trashes their house. I think they're going to go down to their basement and put on their snowmobile suits and mucklucks or sorrels and maybe put some wood in the fire and eat out of their venison and fish out of their freezer for a few months. Then perhaps I think there'll be starvation unless people can maybe ice fish or grow some food in some hard plastic greenhouses or something.
All right. Well, I'm not a survivalist, so I'm unlikely to write any sequel. But with regard to your prediction about such an event, Sean, there are a lot of recent statements from climatologists and the UN and, all kinds of people saying that we're going to have rapid climate change. All of a sudden they're saying, gee, guess what, folks? It can happen.
Well, let me give you the hard science on which it's based. The
sure.
hard science is based on the Origin mission and scientific findings of the 46th and 72nd Reconnaissance Squadron, which flew a B-29 bomber called the Key Bird. And this was under what was a polar surveyor expedition that the military called Project Nanook. And Project Nanook specifically found three North Magnetic Poles, as previously believed there was one, and that they learned that the actual location of the magnetic Earth pole was approximately, there were two local poles on the Bathurst Island and one on the Boothia Peninsula. And this is what they were worried about. They found something that they called polar wander. And by the way, Project Nanook also established all of the various routes to allow polar travel actually over the North Pole through aircraft, which is considered one of the greatest achievements of the U.S. military in the last 50 years.
We've actually seen the pole wandering.
Well, it says that polar wanders occurred frequently in the geologic past. It's a shifting Earth's crust. Well, to get through all that, they went down to a guy by the name of Dr. Paul Seipel at the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, California, and they were contracted to conduct lab studies using models of the Earth constructed of a series of concentric spheres,
mm-hmm.
an inner sphere representing the electromagnetically charged molten core of the Earth whose axis defined the magnetic poles, and an outer sphere that represented the crust which rotated around the geographic polar axis. So it was determined through a series of repeated experiments that as the magnetic pole approached the geographic pole, that the magnetic pole would at some point accelerate its rate of convergence as though pulled towards the geographic pole by centripetal force and jump to then coincide. But instead of the poles actually then coinciding, the magnetic pole would rapidly flip around the geographic pole, then spin off towards the equator, pulled by centrifugal force, ending up at a position where the two axes assumed an approximately 89% divergence. And, of course, after this polar flip occurred, the axes would then gradually begin to reconvert over a long period of time. Now, there are things like the HARP project.
Yeah, but what that means...
Well, it would mean the end of life on Earth as we know.
That's right. And you think the HARP project and others like it are intended to avert this?
To quite possibly stop it. And, you know, the Earth has a long history of cataclysmic rather than gradual changes.
It sure does.
Dry land, which were once ocean floors.
Oh, yes.
Entire sunken civilizations in 2,200 feet of water.
Yeah, it's like scientists are just coming to realize this. It's kind of weird.
Well, it was, I mean, this is something they came to the conclusions of in the 60s. And the military was afraid of letting this information out, and then there were a whole series of magazine articles in Life and Look magazine that were done on it, and people were like, I mean, it's too big a concept for people to get. But the biggest thing was is that in the 60s, when they did this, they said that at the rate polar wander is occurring, that when geomagnetic north and geographic north actually strike one another, that we would see a polar flip, and that their prediction was that this would happen between the years 2012 and 2014. And as far as an actual direct threat to the planet and civilizations, we know it. I think that is the single most dangerous thing, because as the magnetic pole moves towards the actual geographic North Pole, you're seeing the polar wander will create all of these gigantic storms, hurricanes, bizarre freak weather, and it's all happening right in front of us, exactly like you talked about. And
yes.
One of the big major predictions also that I made that back in 1992, was that I saw a landmass that would actually be rising off the coast of Florida, and that this landmass would be a section of Cuba, and that sections of Florida would sink. And I put this on the map, and I sent it out again in October to everybody to show them, look, this is what I saw in 92. And I saw that whole area being called New Atlantis in the exact area.
You know, imagine for a second a landmass coming up and literally connecting Cuba and Florida. Now, what a political nightmare that would be.
There you go. Well, and on your show, you're the one that broke the story about Atlantis and 2,200 feet of water right there.
Yes, we
did. And it was on a map that I drew back in 1992 that said this area would be called New Atlantis, which I think is what's going to happen with Cuba a few years from now.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi.
Hello, where are you?
I'm in Marinette, Wisconsin.
Okay, sir, go ahead. Now turn your radio off, please.
Okay, no problem. Actually, the thing I wanted to talk about was...
Turn your radio off, please.
There we go. Okay, the thing I wanted to talk about was I was listening to you last night, and you were touching on the pyramids, and you were speaking of the secrecy that was being held there, and I was wondering if that was actually something that was going to be able to take place, and if we were actually going to be able to know the truth about what's underneath there.
Now, there's a great question. Sean, I did a repeat show, actually, with Graham Hancock.
Oh, yes.
And we were, of course, you know, discussing what might be awaiting under the Sphinx.
Right.
And that's something we haven't touched on in a very long time. What can you tell them about that? When might those secrets be revealed, and what might they be?
I can tell you what they are, but as far as when they'll be revealed. But
okay, tell me what they are.
What I believe from my viewing of what's underneath, directly underneath the Sphinx, and this is from the first off, let me tell you what's there. There's a box directly underneath the Sphinx that's about 30 feet down, and the box is approximately 30 feet tall by 60 feet tall. It was actually ultrasounded first by the Japanese in 1974, again by Stanford University in 1986, and then again by the Japanese team in 1996 again. Various proposals have been put to Zahi Hawass to drill a camera down into this box, but, you know, Zahi is, no, because you cannot hurt the pyramid, and I am the caretaker of the pyramid, and if you hurt the pyramid, I will be very angry.
Yeah.
So, what I think is in the box is that, and this is one of the things that that the Japanese found, was that there was some sort of magnetic thrum that was coming from the box. Who knows? I mean, what I've remote viewed is actually in the box is that the tools that actually built the pyramid, which I believe are the ancient Ark of the Covenant, the Staff of Ra, and quite possibly the Caduceus, but actual boxes or devices or things that were responsible for quite possibly building the pyramids maybe some 12,000 years ago, or redecorating the pyramids or rebuilding them in the same spot. The Hall of Records that Edgar Cayce spoke of, there is a, this was just tradition when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we used to kick this stump that was sort of in a roundabout right there in Giza. And Edgar Cayce specifically said that when the sun rose, I think on specific days between like May 20th and June 20th that it rose on a hill between the Sphinx's paws and the sun, and it would then cast a shadow. And it was underneath that small hill that was the capstone of the Great Pyramid, which was somehow a great crystal that was inverted that then hermetically sealed.
That's right.
Literally the tomb or the Hall of Hermes, or Hermes Trismegistus, the great king and all this. And I believe that that's the entrance to the Hall of Records. It's actually it's now sort of a roundabout.
So in other words, there is the technology that built the pyramids, which is a totally non-trivial matter to be found,
mm-hmm.
and there is the Hall of Records, which will tell us about our own, well, it'll tell us everything. About
correct. And of course, they've already found, you know, that back in 96, I published an article in my newsletter about the Tomb of Osiris, and then 2 years later it was on Fox TV and all this, but there's an entire series of underground chambers, to the point of which I think people are kind of missing the forest through the trees, because I think that the Hall of Records and this underground city that everybody's looking for, I think, is the entire plateau.
Well, as you pointed out, Dr. Hawass, you know, rules it with an iron fist there, and he still does, and there are always rumors of, you know, his political demise and somebody else coming along who might suddenly allow exploration that he is not, but all of the rumors of his demise have proven to be somewhat premature.
It's not going to happen. He's going to eventually become the director of the Supreme Council of Antiquities. He's like a movie star in Egypt. And I also, I mean, I like Zahi. I think he's a great guy, and I believe that he's legitimate. If I was to go, say, to the University of Chicago and had $1 million and could actually approach him with a university study that was directly legitimate to doing certain things, like, for example, like Gatenbrink had to do.
Yes.
But Gatenbrink, in exchange for just allowing him to send his little robot up a shaft, he had to then make a trade with the Egyptians and kind of do a little camel trading with them and say, well, I'll put a whole new air conditioning system in, or new vents, or new whatever. So first off, it's a question of money. Second off, it's a question of research. Third off, it's a question of the legitimacy of the research. And third off, if you go and mention Atlantis, or if you mention the Hall of Records or anything else, they pretty much just boot you out of the country.
Because, right.
He just
absolutely
doesn't agree with any of that stuff.
I know. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Where are you?
Indio, California.
Okay. You have a terrible click on your line, sir. Go ahead.
My name's Michael from Indio, California.
Yes, got it, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got three questions, short ones, okay?
That's too many. One, best shot.
Here's one I guess he did not really talk about in reference to what he predicts what will happen in the Middle East and Asia and Europe and et cetera.
Yes?
I don't hear very much about where I live, California, the closest neighbor, Mexico. Does he have any idea about if things are going to improve?
All right. For North America, as the euro dollar is being, I saw him spitting out the euros the other day on TV.
Yeah.
So as everything you talked about comes to pass, what will happen in North America? What about Mexico and our neighbors? Will we solidify?
Well, it's eventually, and as I said, I hate this happening with all my being, but it eventually becomes. I think that the United States eventually becomes a 13. Nation state section called the NAU, the North American Union, which consists of a 10-nation confederation directly within the United States, Mexico, and then the western section of Canada. One of the biggest natural catastrophes that I see happening within about the next 10 years is the destruction of Mexico City. I just do not see any way, shape, or form. I can't tell you right now when it's going to happen outside of maybe between 2005 to 2007. The rotation of Cocos Plate right now with the eruption of Mount Popo, that is a direct precursor to, I think, massive catastrophes in Mexico.
Right.
Which is then going to lead to one of my major predictions for the Bush administration was that they were going to simply throw the borders wide open between the United States and Mexico. And I'm opposed to that. I mean, I think that unless you have borders and culture and language, that you no longer really have a nation. And already done that. He's just throwing the borders wide open, which I think is going to directly, severely affect the economies in New Mexico, Arizona, and already has in Southern California. Conditions are not going to get much better in Mexico. With the Milagros down there and with the everything from the Japanese Honda plants going in to all of our industry actually moving south of there. I mean, it moves south of there because they can oppress the Mexican people. They don't have unions. They can pay them nothing. I don't see conditions getting much better. And I think that the Earth change phenomenon, we didn't really get a chance to talk about this because I think that the three major things are going to occur. I still think that by late 2002 to the beginning, to the spring of 2003, you're going to see the eruption of Mount Rainier in Washington State. One of my major predictions in the newsletter was the 7.0 earthquake underneath Seattle that I felt was the beginning of the ticking clock for the eruption of Rainier.
Right.
And something else that I'm seeing too, and this is New York, I'm seeing New York, Vermont, and Pennsylvania. And this is what I don't get, and I can't really clarify it now, but there's going to be something that's going to happen this spring that is either, it looks like either an earthquake or some kind of ripping earthquake, or maybe an attack on like a nuclear plant or something, but there's something huge happening in New York City. I'll get more specifics on it and put it in the newsletter.
Something seismic.
Something seismic, but I can't tell. I don't know if it's seismic. I can't tell if it's terror-related or seismic, but there's some gigantic event that causes a large evacuation of people and a great deal of destruction somewhere in upstate New York.
When the Twin Towers came down, that was a detectable, very detectable seismic event. So.
Right.
It could be either one. All right, Sean David Morton, hold on. We'll get right back to you and all of you on the phone. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. To Sean David Morton. Sean has a newsletter. Sean, you want to tell him how to get it before
we
plunge back in here? Go ahead.
All right. The Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow. Mm. We've boiled it down very simply to one number. It's 888-452-7999. That's 888-452-7999. You can also sign up for the spiritual remote viewing classes, too. We've got a class coming up January 19th in Pasadena, February 23rd in San Diego, March 16th in Las Vegas, April 27th in Phoenix, May 18th in San Francisco, and June 22nd in Seattle, Washington. Like I said, I just won $11,000 at the casino using stuff that I can teach you how to do in basically an afternoon.
I'm impressed.
The Delphi Associates newsletter is $60 for a one-year subscription. We're going to make a special for you. There's a couple of specials. If you sign up tonight, we'll send you the last two issues of the newsletter free, first class. And we'll start your subscription to the newsletter with the January 2002 All Predictions issue. So that's two free issues of the newsletter we'll send you out first class. Also, if you subscribe for 2 years, we'll give it to you for $99, which is, of course, about $20 off the regular price. You can also, for an extra $12, get the newsletter sent to you first class as well. So we do have operators standing by, so the lines won't be jammed up. But it's 888-452-7999, 888-452-7999. And also, you might want to check out our website because you can order off the website, the newsletter, and get a lot of links to a lot of other intuitives and a lot of very interesting people. Our website is www.delphiassociates.org.
And, of course, we have a link.
And, of course, Art Bell has a link on his website to delphiassociates.org, 888-452-7999. We'll treat you right if you guys sign up. I know the economy's kind of bad, but we're going to have some great stock predictions coming up, some fantastic predictions for the year. It's going to be a real reestablishing year. So 888-452-7999, the Delphi Associates newsletter. You have to have it today because it tells you all about tomorrow. There you go.
Here we go indeed. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Art?
Yes.
This is Dean. I'm AM 570 Washington.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm standing on the street in unit block of T Street. Some of us here in Washington want to know about the anthrax. You wouldn't know what kind of a worker I am, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Postal worker?
You're a postal worker.
Yes, sir.
All right. And, yeah, that's a very, very good question. Sean, are people dead?
Well, the anthrax is primarily military grade. It's coming from the only people that have the ability to make it like that are either the U.S. government, which means that stockpiles have been stolen, or it's coming directly from the Iraqis. I think that there's going to be, well, it's just, this is one of those Captain Obvious things. I mean, it's just going to, it's one of those things that's going to continue. You are going to see, you know, I don't see thousands of people dead. You know, there's maybe dozens of people that are probably directly affected by it here in the United States. The only thing I can tell you specifically about it, I mean, there are a series of isolated incidences. I think that they're probably going to pin a lot of the anthrax attacks directly on Saddam, which is going to be another reason why we're going to go after him.
Sure.
And, of course, the next big thing is not only going to be anthrax to the mail, but also anthrax actually dusted onto money and then distributed into the...
We are going to need a new reason to go after Saddam. In other words, Samo is not going to do it. To actually mount a big military force against Saddam or do anything else.
Right.
We're going to have a new reason.
Well, it's either going to be the anthrax or further terrorist attacks within the United States that are going to be pinned directly on him. I mean, we're in a seven-year war cycle now.
The anthrax would do it. There's a lot of people think it came from a domestic source.
That's what I was saying.
I meant actually sent by a domestic sources. But if it were sent from Iraq or Iraq sponsored it, no question about it. That would be enough.
Only they and the United States government now, I think, have the... what they're actually calling the weapons-grade anthrax. But once again, anthrax can't, unless you're spraying the stuff over the city in a plane,
right?
It's very difficult for an anthrax attack to affect large portions of the population.
I know, but it's still sufficiently terrorizing people, and that man was a postal worker.
Of course, and you know, I don't know what these people are thinking, pissing off postal workers. You know, it's
a good point. It's a very good point, John. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hi, Sean. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford.
Hi, Bill.
Yes, Sean, hi. A lot of things you're talking about are very frightening and very troubling, particularly the seven-year war in the Middle East or India and Pakistan. I think you even mentioned North Korea also. I hate to say it, but you sound a little bit like Ed Dames, Dr. Doom.
Okay, and your question, sir?
Yes. Something positive that could go against all this that might bring us together, and that involves science, the space program, specifically Cydonia, the face on Mars, which you're well aware of. My question specifically is, if this year in 2002 coming up, if Michael Malin or the Mars 2001 Odyssey spacecraft should prove out the artificiality of the face on Mars, could that bring the world together?
All right. That's a good question. Sean?
Well, I think the majority of people already think that the face on Mars is, I mean, the only people that don't think the face on Mars, in my personal opinion, isn't artificial and representative of some extraterrestrial civilization or a bunch of, you know, government poopahs that are trying to cover up the truth from us.
You include Michael Malin?
Well, I know that the photos that were released the last time were monkeyed with. I mean, they turned up the gain on these things. If I took a picture of George Bush and did the same thing that they did to the face on Mars before they released it, you know, you wouldn't recognize him. I don't know so much about the face on Mars. The biggest thing that will bring people together is going to be communications technology. It's going to be massive improvements in cell phone technology, communications, internet. And I'm telling you, all of this stuff, as far as bringing the planet together, what I see happening, and I say this over and over and over again, is the formation of these massive spiritual communities,
right,
of people who are using the internet and cell phones and computers. This is kindergarten. This is, I'm telling you, kid stuff for what's about to happen, which is going to be smashing the barriers of time and space. And it's one of the reasons why I'm putting so much effort into the remote viewing stuff and the spiritual remote viewing specifically, to show people that all time and all space exist all at once within the human mind, and that telepathy and direct contact, whether or not it's with angelic beings or extraterrestrials or spirits from beyond, is going to start happening in 2003, 2004. The walls between dimensions
are literally
going to come down. And there's going to be groups of people who are going to devote themselves towards a spiritual idea.
I already see that occurring.
And who are going to turn away from material civilization as we know it.
Yeah, I see the walls coming down now.
And that's going to be the biggest change that brings humanity together.
I'm kind of at the forefront of noting that change because of the kind of program I do. And
you're one of the people, I'm telling you, Art, and you people out there, you guys should thank God for Art Bell, because I'm telling you, there are only like five forms. There's only five guys that own everything now. You know that. There's like Vivendi, Disney, Capcom. You know, you're it. I mean, there's nothing on the TV anymore. There's no more sightings. There's no more Strange Universe. You're one of the few alternative sources of information anywhere in the world, because everybody else has been shut down except you. And people out there should thank their lucky stars that you're on the radio giving some kind of alternative form of information to people out there.
Very kind. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Hello. I cannot believe I'm through.
Yes, you are. Where are you?
For months. Oh.
Where are you?
Glendale Heights, Illinois.
Okay.
Something seems to happen when I get a hold of you, and we lose contact immediately. But many of the things that you feel, I feel, and have felt, and I want to know before I ask Sean the question, you won't take snail mail. I do not have a computer or access to one. And I want to know, can I send mail to your radio station?
No, we're not taking. I'm terribly
not
sorry.
Not your particular one, the one in Oregon that I'm calling through right now.
I suppose you could try that.
Do you have some kind of a phone number or an address?
You know what? I'm not sure they're taking it either. I mean, this has been ruined. So I'm sorry, ma'am.
I wanted to tell you about the
okay,
animals.
Fine. I will try and get you information on that. That's all I can promise. Right now, we don't know what to do about snail mail. So you have a question?
Yes. Sean, have you ever remote viewed the Coral Castle in Florida?
Or was supposed to have had...
The secrets of the pyramids.
Yes. I've been there. I've actually physically been there and seen the photographs taken of the guy while he's in the meditative state. But
she wants to know how he did it.
Well, he's a Lithuanian who I think he claims to have directly discovered a direct link to the magnetic ley lines of the planet, and I do believe that he came up with a way possibly using, there's no mystery about it. His claim was that he could actually directly meditate and get in contact with the planet itself and actually manipulate the ley lines of the planet.
Yeah,
literally manipulate gravity.
After seeing it in person, is it also your view that he would have had to have possessed that kind of technology that we're talking about right now in order to have done what he did?
Yes. The Coral Castle in Florida is amazing. And there's a photograph that was actually taken of the man where he's got a weird sort of energy field actually coming out from around his head.
Do you have that photograph?
In a square. It's in the book that they sell at the Coral Castle.
Would like to see that.
I've got it somewhere. I'll send it to you in the email, actually. So there's an actual photo with him with what looks like a square around his head doing the meditation and the whole thing. So it's a fabulous place, and I think he is directly in tune with it. I think the pyramids were probably built the same way, but also using a certain aspects of sonics. And also using, I think, the Staff of Ra and actually what was then a prototype of the Ark of the Covenant, but that's a whole other story.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, Sean.
Hi.
My question has to do with what you believe or your opinion is on the rapture as well as the Antichrist as far as your studies or your personal beliefs.
Well, I mean, my personal beliefs are that... I personally think the rapture, as it's described in I think it's 2 Thessalonians 22, it's only mentioned one place in the Bible by Paul. It's something that was sort of glommed onto by modern Christians when the Bible was reinterpreted by Schofield in the early part of the 1800s. I don't particularly believe in the rapture per se. However, I do believe that there is a messianic figure coming in about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've always looked to the pyramid because it says in Isaiah 44 that in the last days that the Lord thy God in the center and at the border of the land of Egypt shall build a pillar and a monument to the Lord thy God. And so I've always looked to the time codings of the pyramids as being the great overview of what's going on. I don't think that the messianic figure comes the way people think. I believe in reincarnation over a long period of time, sort of a racial and spiritual migration upwards,
mm-hmm.
Which of course most modern day Christians don't believe in the reincarnation concept, but I see it as for example, I see the resurrection of the quick and the dead quite specifically as being an age of universal reincarnation that's directly described in the Great Pyramid as beginning about the year 1914 or so, which then leads to 6 billion people on the planet, which then leads to a judgment age. And if you look, and as a matter of fact, in this month's issue of the newsletter, I give an entire series of quotes where I quote directly out of the Bible, talking about the kingdom of heaven, the coming messianic figure, where Christ describes that the messianic figure comes after the earth is cleansed, and I actually put the pyramid prophecies and predictions from the Great Pyramid decoded by Peter Lemercurier directly next to the biblical quotes that show that the Great Pyramid very elegantly states in its very geometry actually backs up many of the prophecies in the New Testament. But as far as the rapture goes, I don't personally believe in it. I know a lot of people do. I think the resurrection of the quick and the dead quite directly is an age of universal reincarnation.
How do you feel about the Antichrist depiction in Revelation?
That's a whole other ball of wax because
funny, I heard you mention also about the chip implantation, which I emailed Art about a couple of weeks ago.
Right, the applied digital solution. Well, I mean, the mark of the beast. Remember too that there's three things happening here. You have Nero was one of the first antichrists who did mark the Jews with the triple sixes back around, you know, between 60 and about 80 AD or so. You then have the establishment of the Roman Catholic Church, which is predicted in Daniel as the resurrected, what he talks about is the revived Roman Empire in the city of the Seven Hills. You then have what appears to be an antichrist character coming up out of the Book of Revelation that many believe to be whoever is the leader of the European Union. I can tell you there's one guy to watch. There's a guy named Angelo Sanatelli.
Is he the one-eyed fellow?
I'm sorry?
Is he the one-eyed fellow?
No, Angelo Sanatelli is a Roman Italian who was one of the architects of the whole European Union. You know, the problem with the Christian prophecy is that they keep talking about a 10-nation confederation.
Right.
And there hasn't been a 10-nation confederation of Europe states. I mean, it was for like 10 minutes where there are 10 nations. Now it's 16. It's eventually going to be 22. So the idea becomes that is the Antichrist, that Antichrist in Revelation, a political leader, and then there's like a false prophet who's more like a New World Order religious leader, who comes along, which I think is a quite possible scenario, considering now you're seeing the establishment of what people in science fiction and biblical prophecy have talked about for years, which is the chipping of the population in the European Union. I mean, is going to start to happen on the 1st of January 2002.
All right. We don't have a lot of time. So,
right.
wild card line. You're on the air.
Appreciate the question. That's a great question.
Sure.
Hi there, Sean.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm calling from Toronto. Great to hear from you. Interesting to hear your predictions, and I don't know if I'm allowed to sort of comment on them or just to ask you a few questions, so I'll just err on the side of caution and ask you a few questions. You mentioned that you thought Cheney was the main man. Seems to me he's almost as elusive as Osama bin Laden. And I have a gut feeling that Tom Ridge, this Homeland Security thing, I think what they're doing, I don't know, but my psychic vibe is saying they're grooming him for vice presidency. They're getting the public to know him, and he's taking on stature every day. They're giving him the opportunity to do so. And when the announcement comes, I don't know, but I don't think Cheney's well enough to suffer this. I think it's why we see his wife.
And your question?
My question was, your point was about Cheney being the main man. I wanted to ask you also if you think there's a connection between the Australian fires, the Indonesian train crash, the refugees in the tunnel, the Ebola and Gabon and the Congo things going on, the anthrax, the stuff they discovered in all of the sort of Taliban hideouts where they had run from but left all these chemicals lying around.
All right. We're going to have to hold it there. We're
holy
so
cow.
That's a lot to connect.
All I can say briefly is that back in 1994 and then leading up to this is that one of the greatest, I think one of the main things where the bottom literally falls out of the world is that between 2004 and 2006, one of the major predictions, one of my major prophecies has been a global plague, has been a series of biological and chemical agents, if you will, that I think are going to be a direct combination of, on the one hand, a terrorist attack, but also it has a lot to do with the chemtrails and all the bacteria that's actually being brought down from the upper atmosphere, to a natural cycle of all of these volcanoes that are actually gouging up gases with disease and bacteria that we haven't seen for hundreds of years. But between 2004 and 2006, I think that there's a gigantic global plague. Once again, this has to do with an aspect of consciousness, because I think that people who understand spiritual healing, who understand health, who understand natural health, holistic health, just like the flu virus plague between 1918 and 1922, which killed between 10 and 30 million people worldwide. Actually, 10 million people right here in the United States. It's what stopped the First World War, is that people were just too sick to fight.
Yeah.
People that were familiar with things like olive leaf extract, echinacea golden seal, flax seed. There was a flax seed tea that was going around at the time that was a concoction that, it once again, has to do with consciousness. People that are conscious, people that are awake, people that are open to new information and holistic forms of spirituality and health are going to be able to avoid this, whereas the rest of the world is just going to literally go into the pit, so to speak.
They are the ones that will, in a sense, inherit.
Inherit what's left of the earth, yes.
Maybe time for one very fast one. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm Terry from Burlington, Vermont.
Yes. Hi.
Thanks, Art, and hi, Sean.
Hi.
Listen, this has specifically to do with what you said about New York State, really close.
Okay.
I moved here in 95. Sometime, it's hard to tell in real time, but sometime, and I've had these for a long time, I had a pocket of series of dreams. Obviously, at the time, I didn't know where these dreams were taking place, but once I moved here and have gone around the small countryside right around the Burlington area.
Only a few seconds.
So you're running out of time, so what were you going to say?
I've recognized these places, and what I think you're right. I saw a plume. I saw a plume over the horizon, over the lake here, the Champlain Lake.
In other words, she's agreeing with you, Sean. We're out of time.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
God bless you, Art. You have the best coming New Year of the horse, and Happy New Year to everybody out there. And once again, it's just been such a great honor to be a guest on your show over the last, and be a family of yours, really, for the last 10 years. So
and
thank
to
you
have
God.
You here. Thank you,
thank
Sean.
You.
Good night. That's Sean David Morton. Tomorrow night, we'll pick up with all of you as our predictions for the new year continue. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.